Hi everyone, welcome to a new episode of The Pivot of Change. Today we have a special guest, Alice, and she's an artist, photographer, tarot deck creator, filmmaker, writer, and last but not least, she's an entheogenic guide. And one of her favorite things to do is challenging the status quo. And she really found her purpose in making the wrong things right again, which we'll also dive into a bit later. And she now combines basically all of these different talents that she found throughout the years to create change within ourselves and also within others. And she guides other people to meet themselves, so different aspects of themselves, and creates a very space for them to release all these layers of conditioning and all these emotions that are stuck within us. And she loves working with entheogens because they are a wonderful tool to softly open up the most resilient doors to our subconscious mind. And how it all works, we'll also dive into, of course, during the interview. But I'm really happy to have you here, Alice.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here too.
Yes. So could you also explain maybe a little bit for people that don't know, and I also find it difficult to pronounce it, but what does entheogenics mean?
Yeah, no, you pronounce it right.
Okay.
This is a word that includes all the substances that you can take that make you meet God within yourself. So you have the psychedelics, for example, but then you have a substance like kombu, which is not a psychedelic, so you cannot call it psychedelic. Mm-hmm. Psychedelic are substances that make you have visions. But kombu is a substance that also helps you to release a lot of emotional baggage and really makes you meet yourself. So kombu would be part of entheogens. Rapé, which is a shamanic snuff powder, is also not, doesn't give you any visions, but is also part of entheogens. So yeah, it's just a word that includes all of these substances then.
Yeah, and when did you found these substances? So in what was happening in your life, and where were you when you first kind of was introduced to different substances?
I was 25 years old, and well, I knew about these substances from before because in our teenage years we hear about magic mushrooms or LSD or ecstasy. I was never interested in them. I was always judging everyone around me who take them, and I had not a lot of interest. At the same time, I did have a depression, full-on depression where you're depressed for a long period of time, but I was like temporary depressions where you're depressed for 6 weeks, 2 months, then you feel better again, but then it comes back, and then it comes back again. So I was struggling with that, and I was trying a different method of therapy, and this wasn't working. But that was not necessarily why I tried psychedelics for the first time. This is why I continued. So why did I try psychedelics? Because one of my best friends, who was also not interested in them, he started to try them out. He went into the jungle and the Amazon, and he tried ayahuasca, and he called me up and he told me all about it. And it was like, at the same time, I wanted to be judgmental and say like, oh, no, don't do this. But it was fascinating what he told me. And then he came back home, and he sometimes took magic mushrooms, psilocybin mushrooms, and he told me all the lessons that he learned from these substances. And I started to become curious. And then after about 6 months, I said, okay, I'm going to try it, because there was still this judgmental voice in my head, but I was like, I can't be judgmental if I have never tried it. And I tried it, and that really changed my life. It gave me this, even though, like, usually now I work with intention, but that day, well, my only intention was to experience the magic mushroom. That was my own intention, but it gave me a day of being completely relieved of all of my burdens. The depression lifted. I just felt like a child, and I was running around the forest, and I felt like I could see my conditioning, and I could see that that wasn't part of my, it wasn't part of me. I mean, it wasn't me. It was the conditioning. Yeah. Of course it's part of me too, because I took it on. But I could free myself from the conditioning. And just that experience gave me so much drive to move forward that I was like, oh, that's so interesting. I never knew that psychedelics could give you that emotion. See what each of the substances, like how they differ and what they can give you. And so I went on a journey and I tried. I continued trying magic mushrooms from time to time. I tried ayahuasca, MDMA, LSD. Then the substances that are non-psychedelic, like rapé and kambo. Then iboga, which is a psychedelic. So I just went on a little journey. I am to end with the toad, which I did last year, which was the most intense experience of my life. And all really, like, you get a lot of insights on the substances. Now, there are lots of people that take these substances that don't really change their life. Like, it doesn't change their life. I mean, a little bit, but not a lot, because they don't know how to integrate these substances back into their daily life. And at the beginning, that was me too. So I just wanted to learn how to really get the message that I get on the psychedelic. How do I bring it back into my life? And how do I really create change in my life with that? And so I went to different seminars and workshops to learn trauma integration work and combined the two.
Yeah, and I think that's what you mentioned as well, that's most powerful. That we integrate all these amazing, beautiful, insightful experiences in our day-to-day lives, because then it will actually catalyze it, like real change. So what was kind of the moment when it shifted for you from just using like these medicines for the experience to really doing more emotional work with it and integrating all these insights into your day-to-day life? What kind of inspired you to make a change?
I think it was like one ayahuasca ceremony that was so intense that I had symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder after the experience, because I was really, I was scared and I didn't know how scared I was, and the ayahuasca brought that out in me. So a lot of people, they take these substances and they think my life is going to get better afterwards. But sometimes the only thing that it does, it gives you more awareness of what is there. And I was so scared. I was scared of so many things. And then I did an MDMA. I had an MDMA experience where soon after, like a few months after that ayahuasca experience, say like 4 months after, and that brought up the fear even more. And for months, I was just scared of everything. So I was forced to do integration work. It was not a choice. I mean, of course, it still is a choice, but it was really necessary for me to integrate the experience, because otherwise I would have stayed scared of everything and everyone. But it was just childhood fear resurfacing, and I had to learn how to deal with that. Mm-hmm. How to integrate it. And by doing that, I learned to do the integration work also for positive experiences that you have when you are on substance, when you work with substances like this.
Okay. So, so how do you now kind of integrate these experiences in your day-to-day life? So are there certain things you do, certain methods you use, or what really helps you during the process?
Parts work. So mm-hmm. parts work is a very close to the internal family system. But I work with Carrie O'Reilly, and we have the website A Whole New High. And we both use parts work. So we kind of made it our own, or it's more like it's Carrie's method, not really my method. I'm just following what Carrie has come up with, which is a great tool to talk with your inner parts. Because we all, when we are children and we have something traumatic happening to us, which can be anything that is too much, too fast, or too soon to process, for our nervous system to process. So that can be, doesn't have to be like sexual abuse, it can be very little things. We split off parts of our consciousness because our nervous system and our conscious mind are not equipped to deal with it. But then they stay with us in our subconscious mind. And these suppressed parts, they come up in psychedelic experiences very easily. We keep them away from us because we create protector aspects that protect us from the pain. Like these aspects, yeah. And in our day-to-day life, very often we act out. Like we think we are our protector aspects, and we forget how much pain there is behind these walls of the protection. And in sort of psychedelic experiences, the protector aspect very often comes down, very softly, sometimes a bit harshly. And then we experience the pain that's underneath. But it doesn't necessarily always have to be pain. Sometimes it's absolute beauty. Sometimes we have suppressed how beautiful we are. And then these aspects, we meet these aspects of ourselves on a psychedelic journey. And so in the days and the weeks after the psychedelic experience, we will still, once these inner aspects are seen, and sometimes they integrate in the psychedelic experience, but sometimes they don't. They will feel more raw, more vulnerable, or just like me, I was suddenly scared of everything because I had uncovered an aspect of myself. I was really scared when I was a child, but as a child, I could not tell anyone that I was scared. There was no one there to tell. So I just suppressed it, and suddenly it was out in the open. So we use parts work, or I use parts work, to speak to these inner aspects of mine and show them that they're not stuck in the past anymore, that they're here in the future with me, and that I am their new parent now. And I will not treat them the way that they were treated, and that I will protect them, and that I will nurture them. And and just validate whatever is there, but also make sure that they receive the opposite experience.
Yeah, that's beautifully explained. Because also, for everyone who's listening, I also went to one of the retreats, the Shift Retreat of Alice and Carrie, who are like the best duo ever. And what I also noticed is that during my experience, what really came up during that week is that I felt really unsupported. So unsupported in my childhood, but it continued basically through the rest of my life. And for example, for me, what I need to realize is to find support from other people and to learn to allow myself to be supported. And that when you come back with that knowledge, it's so important to do something with it. So now I also allow myself to be more supported by other people instead of just being the one that supports everyone. And so that's also an example of how you can get an insight and also integrate it into your day-to-day life. And sometimes it happens like immediately. That's some aspects of me that, and also one aspect that was still really in pain of being sick and being in the hospitals. And that could really heal during one of the ceremonies. But other things, like you just mentioned, it takes a little bit more time afterwards. And yeah, so it's always unique.
Yeah.
And yeah, so could you also maybe share of one of your experiences that with any of the medicines that really stood out to you that you've, of course, over the years have had quite a few, but what's like the first one that really comes up that had like a really big impact in your life and created a big shift afterwards?
You just give me a second to think.
Yes, of course.
There are so many. It's really mm-hmm. hard. Like the first thing that comes to mind is the toad experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I might just talk about that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's very interesting. Because I've had so many experiences where I've tried to let go. And
mm-hmm.
It was always really hard for me to let go in a psychedelic experience because of the fear that I had of letting go in childhood. Especially being an older sister, it's something that actually people that come first in a family often share, not all the time, but
mm-hmm.
people who come first in a family often have a harder time letting go on psychedelic experiences. So, but what everybody tells you when it comes to psychedelic experiences is that you have to let go, you have to surrender. And I was never able to do it. And I was always judging myself because I couldn't do it. Until one time, I took Yopo, which is also it's a psychedelic from the Amazon that contains DMT. It was the first time on Yopo where I was trying again to surrender, to let go, and it wasn't working. And then in the middle of the experience, I was like, wait a second, who actually told me that I have to let go? It's like, what if letting go is bullshit? Like, what if I can allow myself to fight right now, what would that be like? And I allowed myself to fight the medicine, and then everything went really easy. Because, you know, that is what surrender is, surrendering to what's there in the moment. And even if resistance is there in the moment, surrendering to your resistance instead of trying, like, of judging yourself for it.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time I was really able to let go. That was on the Yopo experience. And then a year after that, I took the toad with another medicine. They say it's the most powerful medicine on earth. Of course, you don't know. Maybe we haven't discovered one that is even more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And you smoke it. It comes from the back of a toad that you can find in Mexico and the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And contains 5-MeO-DMT and bufotenin. And the experience is very short. Just to give you an example, psilocybin is a 6-hour journey most of the time, and this is just half an hour, but it's much more intense.
Hmm.
So you, in that moment, and I was really, like, first of all, I was really scared because people told me if you can't let go, it's going to be really difficult. And I've had so many experiences where I can't let go. I did have the experience where I allowed myself to fight, and that was okay, but I was still scared from all the other experiences before. But yeah, I took the vaporizer and I just spread it in, and if you have to count to 5, after 4 I was gone, and it was so gentle and so powerful. And it was the first time in my life I was fully, fully able to surrender. Not like there was no resistance there, nothing. I just surrendered completely. And I just laughed in that moment because my lesson there was like, there is nothing you can do to let go. You cannot learn to let go. It just happens. You just let go. And it's really hard to explain. But it's just about having enough trust. You can't force yourself to let go. You can't force yourself to surrender. In that moment, I just trusted. And then it just happened. And it was really beautiful. to fully surrender and let go. And I just went into a place of oneness and light and bliss, and felt really amazing. And I came back and I was just grateful for life and how we are just having that experience of being one with everything. I was so happy to be in my body again, separate from the others, because that way it was a lot more interesting, you know, and than being in this state of bliss and oneness, which was beautiful too. But you know, I saw the benefit of being at the different parts. That experience was one of the most that impacted me the most, because it was mm-hmm. the first time I was able to fully let go.
Yeah, because I think it's so funny that you mentioned that, because I can really struggle with letting go into my day-to-day life as well. And the more you try to force yourself to let go, or the more you try, I need to let go, it's the more you're actually holding on. And it's really funny how it works. And then I always just remind myself of be present with what is.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes when I feel resistance or anxiety, and it's like, I need to let go and not worry about this and what's going to happen. It's like, no, just be present with what is. And if worry is present or anxiety is present, that's what needs to be here. And because I find it really weird that for me, it's very easy to, when I go into processes or into also the experience of psilocybin, I always found it really easy to let go. And then I questioned, why is it so easy for me then? And not in my day-to-day life when I'm worrying about work or where your life is going to go. And it was because I wasn't being present. Mm-hmm. And we hear a lot of times let go and surrender, and it kind of becomes this beautiful poetic words.
Yeah.
But then it's like, how do you actually do it? And it's by not doing, and that can be really... really difficult sometimes. And I think it's also okay, you know. And what I also found really funny, that someone else said that I know, a friend of mine, and she also works with ayahuasca and psilocybin and different things, and she said the same thing, that actually what attracted her to it is that she had so much problems with being able to let go and surrender, and that she still finds it difficult. And I think it's important to not judge yourself mm-hmm. when we find it difficult. That it's most important to not judge it. And there's a good reason for it, right? And then you can uncover those reasons. And so what we also see nowadays is that a lot of people can be judgmental towards actually all these plant medicines, psychedelics, and I think it's now more open than probably ever before in a lot of ways, but there's still a lot of judgments on using it, for example, for therapies, for therapeutic uses, which you mainly use it for. So could you maybe share your thoughts on that and how you deal with that resistance?
I personally don't meet a lot of people like that. I think I'm not an energetic match to them.
Yeah.
I do understand that it's not the way for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people genuinely like don't want to work with them, and other times it comes from a shadow, like a core belief that I don't deserve support. I have to do it all by myself. And taking a psychedelic would be having support. And if you're resistant to that, if you don't want to allow that, then you might reject the idea completely. Or it could be the fear of loss of control. Somebody, like, even people who are like on the spiritual path and on the self-development path
mm-hmm.
might feel like really strong need of being in control, and don't want to judge them for that. Like, that's completely fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for everyone, and I do think that people like that would really benefit from microdosing, just to get a taste of what it is. But I also understand if they're not, they don't want to try that. But really, I personally almost never meet people like that. I just meet people that are super excited and want to try it.
Yeah, because the first people are attracted to you and your work are probably more open-minded and already interested in it in some way. And I think it is not for everyone, right? And that's okay too, you know. But I do feel if people do feel really attracted to it and feel that it's right for them and if they're called to do it, that they need to have that freedom so they can experience it. Yeah, I think that's what's most important. Which, of course, I live in Holland and you're currently also in Holland. So then there's already more legal than probably one of the most legalized countries around drugs and other things. But in other places of the world, that isn't, of course, isn't really the case. So people have to go more underground. So what if you would say someone is really interested in it? How can they actually find someone that they can trust and that's trustworthy or find the right things?
Yeah, it's really hard for me to say because I'm legally not allowed to give any advice on how to use illegal substances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this law. Yeah,
unfortunately, that's something. It's like, yeah, I can't really answer.
Okay,
but I can say that if you go to Portugal, it's decriminalized. If you go to Spain, like in Portugal, all substances are decriminalized. In Spain, Italy, and Austria, magic mushrooms are decriminalized. So in Jamaica, magic mushrooms are legal. Then you have the South America, where you have San Pedro, ayahuasca, iboga. If you do want to do it at home and nothing is legal where you are or decriminalized, then ask around. I would say if anybody wants to do it, even though I don't recommend doing it illegally, is to find a friend who has already done it or somebody that you trust who has already done it, who had a good experience. Because there are so many people out there that don't really know what you're doing. And I have had experiences like that in the past. For example, I did an ayahuasca ceremony where a childhood trauma of me came up and I really needed help. And they told me, no, I just need to lay down and be with it. And that was really traumatizing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important that the shaman notices in a moment where, like, okay, you're the person to go through alone, but in another moment, oh no, you really need to help. The shaman or the guide knows what to do in that moment. Yeah, it's risky because it is only a good experience if you feel safe. So you need to know what the people, like how they are going to react. And you can also ask questions, if a childhood trauma comes up in one of our sessions, how are you going to treat that? And the shaman who thinks that you have to do it all by yourself will probably tell you in that moment, no, you have to go through it all by yourself all the time. Mm-hmm. That's already quite a red flag because you don't have to go through everything just alone.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that was, for me, so powerful with you two, with you and Carrie, during the retreat, that was actually what I needed. Do not just go through it alone. And that was a very important part of the healing process. So it's not just the psilocybin that heals, or it's like the whole setting, right? So first, it's a very safe space. Also, of course, feeling safe with the other participant, the other people you're with. And I feel like that was most healing in my process, that I was supported in it. Because like I mentioned before, for me, it was a lot around support. And I never experienced that emotional support to be like fully physically, mentally, and emotionally to be supported. So if someone like you wouldn't have done that, I wouldn't have experienced that full healing.
Yeah.
Because then I wouldn't know that and feel and experience that it's actually possible. Because that's the most healing, is experiencing the opposite. So when you feel unsupported, the healing thing is actually to feel supported. And what you also hear sometimes, and maybe some people are afraid of, is of addiction, right? So because we can get addicted to substances. My personal view is that's always your relationship to something. Because I have experienced also addictions, for example, with marijuana as well, which I no longer have at all. And I really realized that it was the relationship to it and what you're covering up. But could you also maybe share your views and perspective on working with all these substances and, also addictions and how you can prevent this from happening, or what's your view on it?
Yeah, addiction is, Gabor Maté gives a nice definition of addiction, where he says it's a repetitive behavior that you keep doing even though it affects your life in a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
So we are all addicted to something, if it's a substance or if it's something else. Nobody can say, or very few people can say that they're addicted to nothing. And even if it's, you can't be addicted to healthy eating, because it's good for you, but it causes so much stress in your system, because you have to find like 100% organic food all the time, but it causes more toxins to create in your body than if you would just be relaxed about it. So we are addicted to so many different things, but some of them are being judged in our society and others aren't.
Mm-hmm.
I recommend to read the book of Dr. Gabor Maté about addictions. He has a very interesting view on addiction, where the difference between getting addicted to the substance or just working in a like nice symbiotic relationship with the substance is, are you trying to fill a hole or not? Like the addiction is the symptom. What is underneath?
Mm-hmm.
You have to keep using the substance. You're trying to escape from your pain. And if you take a substance like the magic mushrooms, like psilocybin mushrooms, you go into your pain, then it's not addictive. It's bringing up your pain and you're releasing yourself from the pain. And that is so intense that you don't want to do that all the time anyway. But you can use substances, not all of them, but you can use certain substances to escape from your pain as well. And if you do that, then they are addictive, just like almost anything else in the world. I think that there are a lot more harmful addictions than, like, somebody is addicted to magic mushrooms and takes them once a week. But I still think that we always need to look at the pain that we're trying to escape from, to let go of the addiction and not to judge the substance that we're addicted to, but like go deeper. So like, I don't know who says it, but maybe Gabor Maté, but the opposite of addiction is connection. Like you can heal addiction only with connection. Connection to yourself, connection to other people. Like people who are addicted feel a huge loneliness inside. So, yeah, that's my view on addiction.
Yeah, I definitely agree, because the way I actually healed my addiction, which for me was really crazy, my whole addiction to smoking in general was through actually one session of one deep trauma integration session. And I actually went into the pain. Sort of, that's actually the, you always try to avoid or cover up pain, and addiction is kind of a way of controlling it. Are you trying to control something? Okay, then I don't have to feel that way. Mm-hmm. But that's how you kind of create a dependency on a substance. And what it actually did was I went into my pain, but it was also the first time I went into my pain while someone else was guiding me. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, that's the healing power of connection is so, so important. That's why I think working with a guide, a facilitator, or doing like group work, it also makes it the healing process so much more powerful, because a lot of our wounding and a lot of our healing can happen within connection. Mm-hmm. Right? So to have beautiful, safe connection, that is very healing. And so I never really judged the substance for me. So I never really judged, for example, marijuana or something, because it also gave me a lot on my journey. Mm-hmm. It's not like something is all bad. And I think the same with substances, there are good things to it and what we would label bad things to it. And I think what I also recently found out is, and also within your retreat, is the power of intention. Mm-hmm. So could you maybe also share a little bit about the importance of setting an intention when you start doing inner work, but especially working with substances?
Yes, but if you don't mind, I would first like to talk about marijuana, because
yes, it's
a special substance, and you just mentioned
mm-hmm.
marijuana. And many people get addicted to marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
It's a more highly addictive substance than other substances. I want to explain why. Because every substance has a spirit. Mm-hmm. The spirit of marijuana is the spirit of a mother. And if you, and it's a very like unjudgmental and unconditionally loving mother. And whatever your intention is, so here we go into intention, mm-hmm. she will give you. And if you don't set an intention consciously, she'll go into your subconscious mind and find your intention there. And very often our intention is like, I want to run away from my pain. I want to, I don't want to feel, I don't want to live. I just want to numb myself. What happens often with marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And she will give you that. If that is what your intention is that is what you think you need, there is no judgment. And she's going to give you that. If you work, if you take the same substance, marijuana, and you work with her, like if you set an intention and say, I have a lot of anxiety inside, please help me to find out where this anxiety comes from and how to release it. If you do that and like, respect the spirit of marijuana and ask for help, you will have a completely different experience. One dead will very highly likely not make you addicted. You have other substances like ayahuasca, for example. Ayahuasca works a very different way than marijuana. Ayahuasca doesn't listen to you. If you want to avoid the pain, she's like, no, you're not going to avoid pain. I'm going to bring you right into it. So it's also a female spirit, also motherly energy, but you call ayahuasca the grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And she is going to put you through the pain, even forcefully sometimes. And marijuana isn't. So they have different ways of working. And not one is better or worse. But that explains why marijuana makes people more addicted to marijuana, for example. So that's the power of intention, to just ask the question. You set an intention of like, you want to work with the spirit of the plant or the spirit of substance. And you, with your intention, you can start communicating with that spirit. And what do you call that? When you have a bow and arrow,
mm-hmm.
you create tension when you pull the arrow back. And then you let it go. And the intention is like the direction that you point to error. If you don't have an intention, you know, the error is just going to go wherever. If you put it back, it's attention, and then you put the goal, like, where do you want to bring it to? And you let it go. That's the same with an intention. Like, you don't have to hold on to your intention. Like, oh my God, I have to remember. No, you just say, that's what I would like to get out of the experience, or this is the question that I have that I can answer, or this is something I want to let go of, or and I don't know how, or something. It's like having an intention to go into an experience and communicate that with the spirit of the plant or the substance, so that you can, so that's something like what I just explained with marijuana doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Some of these substances, even also magic mushrooms, they're very unjudgmental. So you want to take them just to party, they're going to party with you. Mm-hmm. But then it's not going to help you in a therapeutic way. Not saying that some people just love to party with them and have them. A lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
We can do it to release some of the old pain that we feel and to make it work easier. Community as an intention. And again, if you have an intention, it doesn't mean that you get that immediately. Like, for example, one time I went through an ayahuasca journey and I set my intention, I want to experience what real love is. And then I was in a really dark hole. And I was struggling. Like, I'm really angry. I was like, that's not what love is. This is bullshit. This is the opposite. And I got really, really angry. Until a few hours later, I understood that a part of my subconscious mind, like an inner aspect, an inner child actually, that felt like this was coming back. It's coming back into myself, like I was integrating her, and it was me who had to give the unconditional love in that moment. And once I understood that, I had so much love in me, and then I felt the unconditional love that I had asked for. Like, yeah, you don't need to get what you want all the time. You can also set an intention, like, I have a chronic illness and I want to know why I have it. There is a possibility you need 3 to 5 sessions to keep me close to what the origin is. Like, where you have one session and then it takes you 3 or 4 more months until you get to the core.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very interesting that you mentioned that, because also I think one of my intention was to understand more of why I had a heart attack at a very early age when I was 18. And it did go into like the sadness and the things I had with it, but mainly happiness that basically the plant medicine showed me so much respect, first for what I went through, and it was really healing for me. But actually, till quite recently, I found out more the why behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And first, it was for me always, I thought like logically and rationally, it was to help do others heal from illness, like heart disease and things like that. But what I recently found out, it was just because that's the message I got shortly after having my experience of having a heart attack. It was this message that it was to help other people heal. So I was always really frustrated with my life. Yeah, but I cannot link it with the medical industry, and how am I actually going to do it? And then I found out it was to actually help people heal on a mental, emotional, or physical level. It doesn't matter. Just to help people heal. And that I got in touch with my heart, and that's how I can understand emotional healing. So sometimes we want to rationalize everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this seems most logical. This happened because of this. But then we're kind of blocked away of seeing the bigger picture. right, the bigger thing. And the same as what you said with love as well, is that you then learn that you can actually give yourself that love, mm-hmm. right? And that is more healing and more powerful than, for example, ayahuasca, which just means, like, if you, okay, this is what it feels like. And then you actually get more out of it. And sometimes it can be frustrating, like, I don't know it yet, or I haven't experienced it yet. But I do truly believe it's like we don't always get what we want, but we get what we need. Yeah. And I think especially when you go on a journey like that, I think that's the thing you always need to remember. You'll get what you need, especially when you set a clear intention.
Yeah.
And Alice, also, do you maybe have some last advice for people who are really interested in it? For example, they decided they're going on a journey, or maybe it's psilocybin, or maybe it's ayahuasca. Do you have maybe a last tip or advice you have for them before going into it?
Well, actually, Carrie and I, we have worked on an online course, and I can advise people to watch it before they go into an experience, because it is always really good to be prepared just to get the most out of it. When it comes to the experience itself, there are just a few things that you need to know, as like what I said before, the surrendering. Surrender to whatever is there, and if you're scared in that moment, surrender you to the fear, and if you're resistant, surrender to your resistance. And it's not about surrendering. Like, surrender is not only the image that we have in our head, but we see beautiful, can't feel terrible as well. And then once you do that, be fine. But then if you look at the course is, I don't know how many hours, I think like 5 hours of material, like what you can do to prepare yourself. We also explain parts work, and we also explain what you can do to when you come out of the experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I can advise people to come to our website, A Whole New High, and the course will probably be there at the end of May.
Okay.
And so it's always a good thing to watch before you go into an experience to get the most out of it and to use it in a therapeutic way.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I think it's so cool that you also actually created a course for it. And so at the end of May, it will probably be available, you said, right?
Yeah, you can, with anybody who's interested, can come to our website and just subscribe to our email list. Mm-hmm. We don't send out emails often, so you don't get spam. But you will be the first one to know once the course is out.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. I think it's awesome. So there's also so much more information on your website, right?
Yeah.
You also have a lot of blogs, or if you're interested in more information about, I think, most things that we actually mentioned, you can probably find it on your website as well.
And we have a description of every single substance, not every single one, but the ones that are most common in therapeutic use, where the substance present themselves. Where I channeled the substances and let them introduce themselves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it's very interesting to read as well when you're interested. Yeah, it's an amazing website. So thank you for creating it. And I also really want to thank you for being here and being open and sharing. And it was really lovely to have you on the show.
It was really lovely to speak to you.
Thank you. And everyone, thank you so much for listening.
Bye. Bye.